Welcome to Just an Average Citizen, the podcast that helps to educate, inform, and empower you to make an impact in Abilene and the Big Country. You know, this is something that I have tried to work through all different angles to see what it is we're supposed to be doing as average citizens. And as I run across people in the community at these events or just around town, I find that most people don't even know the beginning resources to look into, start understanding how our city works and functions. And so that's why I do this podcast, is a way to give you some highlights of some things going on that you don't have time to take to pay attention to, or you don't have the time to go in and actually attend the meetings. It is something that is important for us to know, but there's got to be a better way that we can stay on top of things than having to be present in all things at all times. It's just exhausting, and that's not what it's meant to happen. But as citizens, we have not really been invited into the table to be a part of the conversation for so long that both sides have come very comfortable with the way things are. Those in elected position or in who employed by the city have their groove down, and those who function and live in the city, they have their groove down. But we don't have a community teamwork or a partnership that actually is beneficial to all. So I'm hoping that by you joining in today, you will learn a little bit more about the city, and you take what you can and use it where you can, and the other stuff, just it'll come to you eventually. So don't be overwhelmed. You're not an average citizen in that you're paying attention. You're above average by even listening to this podcast. So I would love it if you would subscribe and share this with your friends and family so they can too become more than an average citizen, because we care about what happens to our future generations in this community. And if we don't get something moving in the right direction, it is not going to be good in the end. Now, I don't think things are terrible here, but I do think this is a direction that is unsustainable and will cause great problems in the future. And so let's get it righted, get the track righted, and let's move in the right direction so that we can actually be able to help be a part of the solutions rather than just people going, I don't like this. I don't like this. We can say, hey, listen, this doesn't seem to be working well. Have you thought of this? And so what's funny is I've told them to put the name tags on top. They don't, and they don't listen. And that's okay, because I'll keep just doing that. But even at the council retreat on Friday, I was like, come on, we do know every councilman's name because they are more predominant in our community, but we really do need to have their names in front of them so that we can see them. Just little things like that. It will make the experience so much more enjoyable. And I'll tell you, this will probably be a shorter podcast, because, you know, there's just only so much time in the week, and I've decided to give myself a little slack. It is spring break. I know that people are off doing fun things with their kids if they have them. Though those who don't have spring breaks, they're continuing to work just like every other day, and maybe we'll actually get to experience spring this week because it's been pretty cold. But anyway, I wanted to let you know that I'm going to touch some highlights of some things that I think are important, and the other stuff we touched on a lot. So I'm going to let that kind of be less featured this meeting, because I do want to get through some of the heavier stuff that I think we actually need to start learning more about. So one of the things this week, it was a really busy week. We had elections on Tuesday. It feels like that was like 2 weeks ago. I can't even believe it. And I just have to say, kudos, Abilene. Abilene in the Big Country, kudos. You showed up in record numbers, and that is impressive. The reason why that is probably the biggest victory we have is because if we're not voting, then it doesn't matter what we're educated in, how we're informed, because voting is the most basic action of any citizen who's 18 and over. And we've got to do that. Now, getting people to understand how to know what they're voting for is important, because there were so many races, you know, that it's hard to know if you just show up and look at the ballot. And we are trying to get resources to where you do have, you know, a conservative voter guide where it's just a suggestion. These are the people who love to research. They look up the information and compare and contrast. And it's not even something that everyone always agrees on, but it's a good place to get started if you haven't learned that skill of researching. And so if there is an election coming up, please ask, message me. You can message me on Facebook or comment on one of my podcasts and let me know that you're interested. And of course, I love it when friends text me and say, what's the voter's guide? You know, it's not just my opinion, but it is what is an overall a great suggestion on where to get started on learning who to vote for and who will make our life in the Big Country reflect more of our values and our community's values. And so it's important to know those things. So we're getting there. I will say the next election in May is something to be talking about, because again, we do have some school board races going on. We don't have any city council races going on. So even though it's just school board, we should show up and let our voices be heard. And while we have some incumbents running in Abilene, if anyone wants to give me a shout out and let me know the best place to look for how to find who's running, because it doesn't seem to be something that's super easily accessible, because I think I'm good at researching and I'm having a hard time finding all that information. So we need to show up, and there's definitely ways you can participate in the elections that will help you understand how it works better. The first thing you can do is become a poll clerk. That just means you're working on the polls on election day, and there are always needing more poll clerks. That's not something that people really understand the value of, but I will say if you haven't worked it as an adult, then you're missing out understanding a huge component of what makes our, what makes these elections work and how they impact us and why they're so important. The other thing, if you want to graduate into a poll judge, it takes a little bit more effort to get into that position, and there's a little bit more responsibility, but there's other things you can do to be involved in the elections, because I will say taking a day off of work to work an election is worth it, because it is such an amazing thing that you, it's so amazing what you can learn about how things function in our local area. And so I will be involved in elections now until the end of time, because there's so many different ways we can be involved. And I look forward to explaining more of those as we go along in the future. But I'm just saying you can be involved and you can do more than just show up to vote. You can look up a voter guide. You can look and research to see who's running and what they stand for and all those good things. So there's a lot of great steps we can take even in the next season. And I told Councilman Price this week, I said, I'm so glad we're not having a city council election, because it gives us just a little bit of a break from having to figure out what's going on. Because I feel like since I've become open and aware of what elections mean in our city, our state, and our nation, I feel like I've been going from one election to another, and I'm kind of tired. So the last thing I want to point out before we go to the weekend review is, if we come to the homepage, the latest news, you know, I'm encouraging you to come and check here and see what's going on, all the news that's going on in our city. And remember, we talked about this earlier, that they were going to be updating the water bill and the billing system. And so if you have not, you will have to update in April into their new system. And so there may be some, just, it might be a shorter billing period or all that stuff, but you'll just kind of have to pay attention. And remember, we noticed that there was a fee that was being lumped into others that we don't really know what it does. And so just wanted to remind you that that's going to be going on here. Okay, so I think that's the biggest announcement I wanted to make. Not a whole lot of big announcements. So the week in review, there were several meetings this week. It wasn't too full, although the one at the end was a doozy. I have stretched my capacity in ways I never thought possible, and I was even kind of maxed out by lunch, but that's okay. Okay, so we're looking at the planning and zoning meeting that happened today. I went and looked at it, and literally I have not had the time to sit down and watch it. So I went over the agenda and saw that there was not a whole lot of new, there was some plats that they were passing, like, which, you know, defines the territory. And then there were some couple of zoning changes and things like that. But there wasn't a whole lot going on. And we've really talked on this one a lot, because it's had a lot of great conversations. So we're just going to go ahead and move on to the next one, which I believe there was a Betty Hardwick Center meeting. Yeah, if you can see. So they had 1, 2, 3, 4 plats that they worked on. And I'll go back and review these and just make sure, because I do want to take good notes. And then they had, let's see, what is it? Zoning changes. So they had a conditional use permit for a duplex. And I don't remember. That's over on the north side, Beach Street. And then they also had a zoning change from single family to general retail, which is probably something to look into. And then they had another zoning change. I'm trying to read this really quickly, and it is hard to catch the things I'm looking for. Acres. Nope, that's not it. So anyway, there was agriculture open to residential single family. And then we also had a planned development district specifically to allow the use of existing structure located on the east side of the property. Okay, so not a lot of exciting things, pretty much standard, but I will go back and make sure we haven't missed anything, because let's be real, sometimes I can't get to every meeting, and that's okay. I did download the packet just so you could see. It's a lot of these black and white plat stuff that is really hard to read. They do a lot of history, which I think is good to know the background. So when people are discussing things, you can, you know, have the background information to know where you're starting from. And so there we go. All right. The next meeting that happened took place was on the Board of Building Standards, which took place on Wednesday. And again, there was a lot of, you know, I think there was, let's see, we can look at it real quick. There was A, B, C, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 items for rehab, demo, or civil penalties, which is just the basic one. And it didn't look like there was any repeat ones on there from what I could tell. So again, I feel like we've hashed those out really well. I wanted to spend most of our time talking about some other things. The I didn't get to include, well, I didn't include a picture on this, but we did take video. It's always fun. I have pushed my husband out of his comfort zone. He's kind of a fly on the wall kind of guy. He really likes to blend in, and we don't blend in anymore. There were 4 community meetings that Neighborhood Services offered this week, 2 on Monday, 2 on Tuesday, and 2 on Thursday. And due to the elections and other things, we were not able to attend any of them until Thursday morning. So we showed up at Rose Park, or Cesar Chavez. We almost went to Rose Park, and I keep saying it wrong. Cesar Chavez at 9:45. The meeting started at 10, you know, because that's what I do. I show up before the meeting rather than when the meeting starts. And there was some women in the gym, and I said, "Hey, is this the community meeting?" They looked at me like I was speaking Greek, and they're like, "Nope, you go ask the guy in charge." And they were really nice, but it was just funny. Clearly, I was not in the right place. It turns out that was an aerobic class for people in the morning. And I was like, bummer. Anyway, so it was not the right place, but they showed us where it was. So we were in the kind of the meeting room, and we were the first ones there, which happens sometimes. And of course, my husband has a really big camera. And so everyone, when they would walk in, they're like, "Are we in the right place? Why is the news here?" And we got to explain that we do this for a podcast. And, you know, we're still not really sure exactly the best way to disseminate all these videos that we take, because, you know, it is really hard to upload on social media. Most people are not going to necessarily want to watch them at regular speed, or they want to have some way to see what parts they need to catch. And so we're still working on that. And really, we just want to be able to let people who have not been able to attend these events to see what they are, because there's several that just are never going to be recorded. To my knowledge, I don't know what you need to do to get them all just to be recorded, because if they're on the calendar for the city, then the public is encouraged to attend. Now they don't, except for me and some other people from time to time. But anyway, I would say a lot of people came in. I didn't even take a head count, and I was shocked at how many people were there until I realized most of the people in attendance were with the city, or they were here presenting services that they were willing to offer to people. So when I watched the Neighborhood Services meeting last week, I recognized that I didn't watch it because they didn't have it on. They didn't have a video of it. I looked on the agenda, and I recognized that it was mainly to offer their CDBG program and home fund programs that offer different services to people who have lower income and own homes and things like that. So I realized that that was probably geared towards a different demographic than maybe just everybody in the population of Abilene, and that's okay. But they indicated that they wanted you to come and be a part, share your concerns about things going on in the neighborhood. And so on this notice, you'll look and see that it was public hearings and community meetings. So they had the public hearing at the Neighborhood Services Board meeting the week before. And they said, "Do you have ideas what would make your neighborhood better, a better place to live? The City of Abilene wants to hear from you. You're invited to discuss sessions regarding neighborhood needs. Invite a neighbor." That's in Spanish. I was like, I cannot read that word. It's in Spanish. Let's go. It's free. Hey, you know, we can make a difference. And so I was like, okay, I want to make our neighborhoods better. What can I do? Let's show up. And, you know, I didn't ask. I wish I'd asked how many had attended the other meetings, but it was like myself, another gentleman who works with a nonprofit, and two neighborhood ladies, and maybe another gentleman, 2 gentlemen. So 2 ladies, 2 gentlemen that were actually citizens, and 1 nonprofit who was curious about what the meeting would entail. And so that's not very many people. And the problem is I think these employees are doing exactly what they're told to do. And so in some ways, I hate to be too disparaging on them because, you know, this is how they've done it. And they've done this for several years. And I told them I'd never heard of these meetings until last spring after they had taken place. And so I've been kind of looking forward to see how these meetings go. But sadly, it was just a repeat of the neighborhood services meeting. And so to me, that felt it feels a little disingenuous to say come to a community meeting when it's a repeat of what we just did at a board meeting. Again, that's fine, but it's like I feel like they have to maintain showing the public what they're doing, but it's not because they need the public respond. And that's something I'll look more into because they did this with the Zubond. The Zubond presentation was made multiple times at multiple locations, but it felt a little forced and a little predictive, if that's the right word. And so there's some patterns I'm seeing that it's like, what is the goal? Is the goal to hear from the community, or is the goal to share these good ideas, or is it just to get what you want done? And the public just needs to join in and do what we're told to do. There was no questions asked about needs in the neighborhood. There was nothing done except for telling what the different funds are and how many different organizations worked. Again, I'm not disparaging the women who run the meeting, but it just didn't feel like it really was a very good use of my time. And I really can't encourage people to go to these when there's really no place or procedure to really get our feedback shared. Now, there is... which I think that's going to come up a little bit later, so I'll wait on that, another opportunity. But we have to start showing up and requiring more so that these meetings will actually be productive because, again, you know, our government is supposed to provide certain needs, public safety, you know, water and utilities, good streets, and these services like these neighborhood community things are a little kind of a gray area that I think that because the church has failed to do some things for so long, the government has taken over and the church has just said, go for it, we'll let you. But it was a wonderful time. I'm so glad I went. I met some really fun people in the community. I met a guy who asked me questions about when the Cesar Chavez rebuild was going to happen. And so we got to have some discussions about that. And we confirmed that we both were on the right page. We understood what was going on. And, you know, that was just, it was encouraging to know that he was very aware of the timelines to that project. And then I met a couple of really sweet ladies who we talked about the Abilene bricks and just I had no idea that our streets were paved with bricks. I mean, I didn't know why I wouldn't have thought of that. Every city had that in the past. But anyway, it was just a neat conversation. And I will say that's the fun part is getting to meet people. And they were really excited for us to be there. And so I was glad that they were welcoming us to be able to share and talk about what's going on so that, you know, in all fairness, we can do a better job the more we understand what's going on. And so I think that they did exactly what they were told to do, but I would think that we could maybe move into making it more community friendly in the future. So I'm glad we got to do it. It was fun. There were some people from the Regional Victim Crisis Center. There was someone from code enforcement. Oh, they did talk about, I did write this down. They talked about how many, you know, the one thing they, and I think I've told you this before, so this is not really new. I've got my stuff everywhere. They had completed 6 houses, which allows $5,000 for a down payment on first-time home buyers. They do have some funding for the critical repairs. And I asked how many, you know, people they helped, and she just said, well, any money we have left over, they roll it forward. And so it didn't really answer my question. And sometimes I'm just not smart or quick on my feet to ask the follow-up question. And again, I don't want to be too confrontational because that's not what those meetings are about. And I say confrontational, I'm not being confrontational, but it can sound a little bit that way when no one else is asking questions. And I'm just curious, you know, I want to know these things. And so again, the ladies were very sweet and I was very glad to meet them and know their names. And even when I went to the city council retreat on Friday, I saw where neighborhood services was and I saw the lady and smiled at her. And so I think they're doing a good job at what their job is. I just think we need to have more conversations about should that job be something that the city actually takes care of. Anyway, so entertain those thoughts with me. Let's mull that over and see what we can do as a community to step up and take care of people in need rather than letting our government do it because we know that they're always going to have lesser quality when it's done by a public entity as opposed to something in the private field. And it's a little overwhelming, to be honest, if I tell you about it, because I don't really know where to get started. And there's a lot of groups that are partnering with the city. And my husband and I were talking about this. You know, we want to make sure that we aren't partnering with the cities or the government programs. We want to begin to present programs of our own that will replace what the city's doing so that they don't have to do that. Because we know a government is not, our government entities do not have, they're not required to, they're not people, they're not humans. They're just structures that have deadlines and things in place. And I'll be honest, I was told that the threshold to get some of this funding was really high. It is. Like, there's very limited. And, you know, the sad part I've heard people talk about in planning and zoning, where all the HUD projects, or I don't know if they're projects, but the homes, there's homes in the flood zone that cannot get any repairs done because there's no supplements that will, you know, and fair enough, you don't want to replace a home that's going to be in a flood zone and flooded again, but there, it's just a problem. The one thing I will say that was really confusing to me, I'm glad I'm continuing to talk about this probably ad nauseum for you, is that they offer this ability to have your home rehabbed, which is amazing. The problem is most people will not take them up on it because the person who needs the rehab has to pay for relocation, pack up their home, and be dislocated for an undisclosed amount of time, like 6 to 12 months. And most people in those situations, they can't afford it. So it's like, it's almost, the program is good, but it doesn't go far enough to really allow people to take advantage of it in a way that's good for them. Not advantage in a bad way, but to benefit from these services being offered. So, I mean, I know that if I was told I had to relocate just to get, you know, if I can't repair my house, I'm not going to have the funds to go relocate or to live with family. And trust me, we've tried to live with family. They're like, we love you, but just come visit. No, I'm just kidding. You know, anyway, that's okay. I'm just saying it is a trying thing to do anyway. And so it feels like, oh, so close, but not good enough. Okay, so let me go ahead and move to the last thing on our calendar this week, which was the city council retreat. All right, so I was helping several people last year run for city council positions, or mayor and all that stuff, and mayor and city council positions. So someone was like, hey, are you at the retreat? Are you going to watch the retreat? And I was like, what are you talking about? I don't even know what a retreat is. And it was on a Tuesday. And so I tried to watch it, but it was over my head. I had no capacity to listen to it. So I'm just going to say, man, I have come a long way, baby. My husband dropped me off at 8:30 and I stayed until 3:25. And I maybe left the meeting at 3:20, to be fair. And they were still going strong. And I took a little break for lunch because, you know, I was like, man, I got to get out of this room for just a minute because it was a lot. The total meeting was 5 hours. That does not include the breaks that we had. And they went through a lot of stuff. And as usual, everybody in the room, everybody but me, at least all the city employees, had all the presentation slides in front of them. And I think that's fair because they're supposed to be presenting stuff on it. And they want to know the order that things are going on. It's great. But how hard would it have been for the secretary to just add them to an agenda packet so that people could know what's going on? Why they don't do that, I don't know. I sent an email asking for the presentation slides. We'll see if they demand that I have to do a FOIA just to get presentation slides that were made public. Oh, in fact, here, let me start this. There I am. I am right there. I am the only person not required to be there. Everybody else there had a purpose to speak on or address, and I stuck it through the whole time. Now, we started off this meeting just, you know, it's this tension of how do you offer up comments in a way that's helpful and not. And so I have been to enough board meetings that I do know that they only allow public comment at the beginning, and that's fine. But there are some that will say, hey, if you have a question anytime, just raise your hand and let us know. Okay. So that was really my intent, was to find out, is this a place where if you need a comment, you can make a comment. And I was told this was discussion only, and everybody was polite about it. It was no problem, but I just said it didn't make sense to have public comment at the beginning of the meeting when nobody knows what you're talking about and there's no place for us to really understand what to make a comment on. And that's when I realized, or I probably already had realized, that it really was just a placeholder because they have to, by law, allow for public comment at these open meetings, but they didn't really intend for people to make a comment. In fact, there, you know, which is funny, last year there was all the people running for council there. There's a lot more people there. And so it was fun that I was, oh, look, our internet's messed up. Let me pause that for just a second. On a great spot of me. I don't make public comments willy-nilly anymore because I understand there's a purpose and a place, but there's just no way to talk to people. And I was thankful at our first break, the mayor did come over and help me understand, was willing to talk to me about what the purpose of the day was and when they really do want public comments. And sadly, they don't want public comments at this point. They want public comments later in the day, which I feel like are kind of at the point where it's already decided. And so the public comments feels non-relevant at that point, but that's okay. So I heard that a lot of decisions were made through the city for the city at this meeting. They could talk and hash about like what the budget's going to look like, what they're going to include. And so they started off with their core purpose, core values, and strategic priorities. One of the things that was mentioned out the gate was that it's going to be tight in fiscal year 25, because of some taxes that they have to pay back again. They have to pay back that they accrued in some way. And so they'll be making payments. And so he kind of warned ahead that fiscal 25 year is going to have less general funds than others. And so that's really interesting to me as a citizen, because, you know, it's like, okay, well, how far ahead do they know this? Because we've increased so many things in fiscal year 25. Like we doubled our, we doubled what we gave to the flat fields. We were only going to give 5 and we gave 10. And it's like, if, you know, you knew that on the horizon, that fiscal year was going to be 25 was going to be more tight in the general fund, then we should have maybe said, listen, we'd love to give you more, but we are going to have to look ahead to the future. And this is just not viable for us, you know, things like that. And I don't know if we can find out that information. That's the problem, is we know just enough to not know what's going on. And so, they talked about their core purposes, which we've talked about a lot. I'm trying to think through the highlights here. The big thing, their strategic goals was infill development, downtown revitalization, efficient, cost-effective government, fuel understudy and the street maintenance. And so again, I'm like, this is where I want to say, okay, I just need a little bit more explanation. And how do I talk to people about this? The downtown and infill are in the same area. It seems now the infill goes a little bit wider, but it seems like we're focused on one part of the city. There we go. Respect, integrity, service above self, excellent in all we do. That's their core values that is showing up right now. But again, downtown and infill feels like it's kind of all in the same area. And here's the strategic goals: provide excellent service, encourage economic growth, actively foster and seek an engaged community. And I will say, I'm not really sure how they're doing that, because yet again, I feel like I'm part of the community that they're not really choosing to engage with. And, you know, fair enough, that's okay. But it's okay that I'm not the demographic they're wanting to reach, but that just doesn't seem like there's got to be a way we can work through that to figure out how that looks. So then they were talking about compensation of years of service. They're talking about stability pay, and, you know, COLA, which is cost of living adjustment, which I think was a great conversation, because on the campaign trail at the mayor forum, the mayor Hurt had at the time was only a candidate. He mentioned that there were $23 million behind in COLA. And I was like, oh my goodness, what does that even mean? Cause that sounds really bad. And then I looked into it and realized that your COLA is not, it's not required. It's something that you can choose to do. So the problem was, in order for them to get the COLA up, they had to pay back, they had to fix that $23 million. And that's just, it's really hard to do. So they have this program that allows for the next 2 years through December 31st, 2025, to change how they do COLA, or the cost of living, you know, for the people who work for the city. And the problem is that the cities were paid, city employees were paid differently a long time ago, and now they're actually being more competitively paid. So as your pay gets better, your COLA naturally increases. But people who weren't paid, then they're stuck at that bad COLA the rest of their retirement. And so it's like, how do you do that? So they're trying to work out a stability pay that the manager presented as being a better option than really changing to the COLA, because the COLA kind of doesn't meet the needs, whereas the stability pay allows to kind of raise that bar a little bit better in a more efficient way. And so the COLA issue was brought up, that most of the COLA improvements would be really getting people who already make a lot of money, they would get most of that money. So, because again, it is how your pay is when you retire that affects it, rather than how much money you can give. And you cannot be discriminatory on who you give. And so I thought it was a really interesting conversation. You know, they do a 401k or a 557 account. I'm trying to remember what the numbers are. I learned so much on this meeting. I can't remember the exact number of the account or how they do, but I think it's in the 401k that they allow the employee to pay 7% and then the city will match it, I believe, up to 14%. And so there's a really good investment program there that will help take care of your retirement probably in a more effective way than worrying about a COLA. And again, you know, I am learning all these things, so I'm kind of speaking from what I heard at the meeting. But what was interesting is the concern was they wanted to get the lower end people who didn't have, here's a map. So you can see, or a graph, you can see the yellow is the difference between giving just a COLA, a cost of living adjustment, versus giving the stability pay or this proposal that the manager had. And so you can, if by this chart, it looks like clearly the COLA is going to be less, it's less beneficial to the higher paid or to the employees at the later end than it is for just giving a 3% cost of living adjustment. And so they have a couple of years to decide this and how they're going to do, but whatever happens on December 31st, 2021, that's going to be the end of this. Okay. So, but they thought it was interesting to hear the conversation. They're like, well, we want to help the people who don't make as much money, but we don't want to help the people who make enough money because they already have enough. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like wealth distribution. You know, like either everyone who has worked deserves to be paid what they've been worked, how they've worked. We don't get to decide who has enough money. That's an arbitrary decision that the government should not be deciding. So it was an interesting conversation that I would love to chat more about. The odds of that happening are probably not so great. So the COLA, so that was a good conversation to talk about how they're going to handle it. And they are at like 94%. Their pay is at like 94 out of 100% on target with, you know, the median or what it is within the state. So they're really doing a pretty good job. He said like 80% was satisfactory, which is kind of crazy to me. The max, like you'd be maxed out if you were doing 110%. So we're talking probably like, you know, a 6%. And I think he said that every percentage is like $300,000. So there's a cost of like $300,000 that's associated with that, which I love that. That was a tangible number. Then they also, let's see, they went into talking about what their needs were for the Abilene Police Department. They talked about how this COLA, how this, I forgot the word again. Stability pay would affect recruiting people from out the city, because it's not that we don't have competitive pay. It's just that there's not a good structure in place to reward those who have been here long enough. And so they're working on that, you know. And again, I think that if your performance is well, then you should be getting increases. But the longer you're there, it doesn't mean you're doing well. So why would you continue to get paid well? And from some of the things I see, it just seems like they're doing enough. And I would prefer to have people who, but again, upright people who actually are improving the situation. But again, it is a government job. And so how do you look into that, right? This was probably the longest conversation of the morning. So I'm going to move. Then they moved on to take-home vehicles for the police department and other city services. And, you know, I felt like this was a good conversation until the end. They're like, well, but we've already done all this, so there's really not much to change. So I was like, well, then why did we talk about this for 20 minutes? If they're all pretty much evaluate on a case-by-case basis, then what are we doing? Because they were just talking about ways to make sure that city employees are not driving, you know, 20 miles outside of town to go home when they have their materials that they need, their car that they need to have ready in case of emergency or something like that. So anyway, it was a fascinating conversation. Let's see if I can get to some more stuff, because I know you're like, it was 6 hours. I said five, it was 6 hours. So the next thing we talked about was, let's see here. Yeah, the take-home vehicles. I did make good notes. Then we talked about the APD and their authorized strength. So they're wanting to get 5 more patrol officers and 2 more detectives in fiscal year 2025, the same in fiscal year 2026, and the same in year 2027. The chief spoke on this and said, hey, listen, you know, we could put all the money in to get all these employees right now, but there's just nobody to hire right now. So let's pace it out. And that way we'll use the money where we need to in a more strategic way so they can get people going. But they seem to say that things are looking up and they're working on getting more people. They suggested to add 19 additional officers for last year, 6 specialized position, 6 patrol, and 7 detectives. And they still need more. So they're going to work on rebuilding that. So then we talked about the TMRS non-retroactive COLA. Okay, so that's where we talked about that. I guess I moved on. The capital improvements. This was really interesting. You know, they talked about the roadway improvements. The Rainbow Map came up again, and they talked about all the things that they've touched from 2016 to 2024. 26% of the roads were touched. $125 million invested. And the street maintenance fund raised $46 million when it was started, and it was started in 2019. They have got their planned improvements for 2024, and the street maintenance board meets twice a year. So it'll be coming up, I think, early in the summer. If you want to get your streets on there, email them and let them know. They are working through this methodically. At one point, one of the councilmen said to the guy in charge of this, yeah, it was Max Johnson, and they said, how are we doing? Are we approving? Are we declining? Are we maintaining? And Max Johnson said, I think we're maintaining. But then city manager Robert Hanna was like, yeah, we're not maintaining. We're doing better than that. I was like, well, I feel like, you know, there's some confusion in how we're describing maintaining. Now, we have a lot of work to do. And what's interesting is when one particular councilman always brings up how long they've been on the council. And I was like, I just don't think that looks good when you've been on the council for as long as you have. And it took until 2019 for us to get something done on the street maintenance program for that. And, you know, the problem is Robert Hanna doesn't think they can really ask the citizens to pay more on the street maintenance fee. And I would agree. I think everyone's kind of maxed out on wanting to pay for that kind of stuff. All right, so we're going to go ahead to the information technology needs. This was really interesting. Oh, look, I caught it. This is, I can't remember his name, Troy something. I didn't hear it. Maybe Troy Jackson or something like that. Okay, he talked about, you know, that they actually needed $450,000 for the Microsoft implementation, which is not currently in the budget. And I think dog park, we just spent $500,000 relocating the dog park. Why can't we put this on actually improvement? He said that the city has not updated their computers in a long time. Like, I think everyone is at least 5 years old or older, and they need new desktops. They need, I don't know if that's the next slide, they need a replacement plan of like $750,000 over several years. They need better surveillance at Kirby Lake. And they need some video control camera from Safety City and just general APD access. And so he also needs some new positions of about $400,000. There's about 5 positions that he needs to really implement some of the things we're doing. And so I think it was Blaze Reagan that said, you know, which one could you do without? And he's like, they're really all important. And I think that's the problem, is I'm starting to see that it's not that we don't have the money. We're just not putting the money in the best places to get the best uses. And so I'll keep looking at that and seeing if those of you who are sticking around for this conversation, because it's going longer than I thought. But again, I feel like we are always behind the eight ball fixing problems from neglect. And it's just, it's like, when do you stop and say, okay, we cannot continue to fund programs that do not meet the needs of getting caught up so that our city services are actually in a maintainable position. I'm not sure how they're going to do that, especially with fiscal year 2025 having a shortfall probably in the general fund. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I'll look into it. So then they moved into the facility needs and parks improvements. They talked about the roofs. They needed $972,000. I think that's right. That seems, yeah. $972,000 to replace like roofs at several places. He also mentioned how they had to sue an insurance company because they weren't paying for roof replacements. And that was not necessarily a good thing, but it ended up being a beneficial thing because they actually got more than they would have gotten had the insurance company just paid. And so that I wanted to say, well, where did all that extra money go? Then they talked about Schneider Electric, which is up here, and how they actually saved about $450,000 more than they projected to save. And so they can continue to upgrade like street lights to be more cost effective. And, you know, they're always in a position of they have to pay for these services, but the cost, the benefit seems to be a good thing that they get money back on. Okay, what is that? All right. Yeah. Oh, that's right. So then they talked more about facilities. They want to add a restroom at Rose Park, a walking trail at Rose Park, You know, they're taking back over the fire marshal office from the Abilene Independent School District. They gave that back, so they're needing to fix it up. And they're wanting to put some more $35,000 in the Storybook Gardens to video surveillance. So they also are talking about a bat and ball sports complex because they're trying to bring tourism into the city through travel ball. And again, I think that's great, but I don't know exactly how we pay for... I haven't found the connection of all the benefits of tourism. Where does it actually go and how does it? Because I know tourism brings a lot of money in, but I'm not sure how the money gets to where it needs to go. And I'm looking into that. So I'm just being honest about it. I don't know what they're doing. Okay. And then also they're talking about a master plan at Fort Phantom Hill. They've sent out a survey. They were able to get 858 responses. I was one of those. But again, I don't really know what the purpose is because we have so much else going on and we're about to have a general fund shortfall or something that is going to make it harder for us. So why are we looking at improving Fort Phantom? Because that's a luxury item, it seems like to me. Then... they also said that they were going to be having an open house on March 28th to discuss what they've discovered. And so put that on your calendar and I'll probably try and be there. I don't know what day of the week that is. Hopefully I can go and I'll try and record it so that we can see what's going on with this particular project. Okay, then we're going to look at the Maxwell Golf Course. This was a head scratcher. Okay, they've been losing $136,000 for the last 5 years for a total of, let's see, where did I write that? $683,000. And to me, that just seems like a money pit right now for the city. They can't, that's a lot of money. You know, when we need new computers and things like this, it doesn't make sense that we're paying. And so they suggested adding a $5 fee on top of it, but that would only mean they would break even. There would be no room for improvements. And so I'm not really sure how that's a beneficial thing. So it seems like while we do want to have a municipal golf course, it seems like it's got to go private because it's just not able to be maintained under the city's supervision right now with it operating in such a deficit, and everything needs to be replaced. The buildings, not the green so much, but the building needs to be replaced. They don't have some of the, I mean, it's going to be like $300,000 to replace that building. And so there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen and I'm not sure how they're going to look at that, but we'll keep watching. Okay. The water utilities. I won't make you listen to all the water utilities like what everybody else had to in that meeting. It was a lot of information. One of the things that has brought me up some concerns, and again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong, but I'm going to look into it and see what it is. And this is what I want you to start doing. One of the things I noticed over the next 5 years is they have $2.5 million for unplanned expenses. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with having a contingency fund, but how do we track what is spent out of that $2.5 million? Do they say these is for, like, I don't know how to look into that. So that's something I'm going to start looking into it. And they also gave us heads up that in 2 years, they're going to be taking out a CO of $11.5 million for two different projects. Same project. They're going to break it up into 2 years. And again, I'm still learning, but that's concerning to me that we know that we have some time and we're going to have to take out two COs. We're not charging enough from what I can say for the wholesale suppliers. And we've got a lot of projects that we're not able to do because we don't have the funding. And that doesn't make sense to me. We have the most debt of the city. The most debt is in the water. Out of the $360 million, I want to say $260 of that is water. And so we're going to take out another $20 million, which to me is crazy because that means we're paying how much in amortization tax? Or I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but the amortization interest. There we go, that interest. You know, we know that we are paying $25 million on $43 million. So how much are we paying? I mean, you know, that probably another $10 million on that. So I'm trying to understand fund budgets and why we cannot save up and start to look ahead to the future like they talk about instead of always just having to borrow from Peter to pay Paul because it doesn't seem to be working from what I'm understanding. Now, I could be totally wrong and I'm willing to continue to look at that and help you grow as we do. But they are working on updating a lot of systems and doing a lot of good things. Okay, the last thing was the stormwater. I think that's where they were talking about not getting enough money. They're barely able to maintain creek maintenance and not actually able to do much more. And so there needs to be more funding and they're trying to figure out how that's going to happen and what's going to work with that. Let's see if I can get ahead to the video. Yeah, that's some of the water stuff. Okay, then they talked about the convention center. And so they're wanting to propose a new venue district, just like they do for Frontier Texas, the Abilene Tourism, I feel like the convention center is already a part of the first venue district of the Taylor County Expo. I'm not sure on that, but they're wanting to do one just for the city. That's what it is. The other one is a county venue district. They want to do a city venue district for the Abilene Convention Center because they're wanting to do some upgrades because it was built in the 70s. It had some updates in the conference center was expanded in 1990 and it had some minor improvements in 2015. So they're thinking that on a 2% hot tax, which is a hotel occupancy tax, if they do a new venue district, their project ready would be the convention center. And they believe that that can generate $11 to $14 million. So they're going to see if it's even feasible to do the projects within that amount and move forward with that. So again, heads up, a venue tax, it doesn't affect us directly as citizens, but if you do anything in the hotels, then you're going to pay the hot tax. And also, I will say that at some point people are going to say, man, there's so many taxes here. I don't know if I want to come. So what is that threshold? I don't know. We'll have to look into it. Then they talked about community needs. They talked about the boundary lines for the north and south seats on the city council and realized that it's basically right now we have 60 on the south district and or the south area, the south line, and 43% on the north side. And so it's not evenly balanced, but they would have to do a study and spend money in order to make it equitable, as our city manager said. And that was just troubling to me to hear the word equitable, because again, that talks about things that diversity, equity, inclusion. And I don't understand how that matters in boundary lines. Part of it is the demographics. Obviously on the north, there's a lot less affluent neighborhoods, but they believe that because of the growth that's happening in the north, maybe this will work itself out. So they agree just to not do anything right now because it doesn't seem to be an issue they want to touch. And I thought it was beautiful. One of the councilmen was so courageous to say, you know, in 1962, they wrote this charter for the boundary lines, and I think we should honor their intent on what they wrote it. And I was like, yeah, isn't that funny? Because not too long ago, I believe someone decided to amend it on an ordinance that the citizens passed because you thought that you knew better than what the citizens knew instead of honoring the intent of what they wanted to do. So it's really fun to get to catch those little glimpses of not complete consistency on how they handle issues. And so to be fair, I don't think he was probably thinking about that. But again, we don't change things that people vote just by amending them. We need to be honoring of ordinances that are passed by request of the city council to let the citizens vote on it. We shouldn't change that. Okay. The other thing they talked about, infield code and compliance. They did this great present. Tim Littlejohn did a great presentation. I loved his graphs. I hope I can get a copy of those because they were really helpful to understand the process. I thought it was really interesting. He said, with Rebuild Abilene, Rebuild ABI, which is their program that they've invested $1 million into, they've already had 3 agreements. They have 15 in process. They fully expect to spend $1 million, and they have about $300,000 left. And so what they're going to do at the end of the year is evaluate what went well, what was struggling, what was easy. Everyone seems to be really positive about it. That sounds great. And they're talking about what that looks like for fiscal year 25. So now this is the nuisance abatement. So this is where your Board of Building Standards comes in. And they said in fiscal year 2022, it took about 60 days to get through abatements. A nuisance abatement in 2023, it was only 44 days. So they're really cutting it down. When Tim Littlejohn got on, he said they were about, I don't know if it's like 2016 when he came on, he said that it took about 15 years to get through some of these things. He said, so they were talking about his improvement time really only had to be 7. So he's already knocking it out of the park. But I do see a lot of improvements. They're working through it. They find that 50% of nuisance abatement or compliance comes in with just somebody knocking on the door and saying, hey, is this a problem? Can you take care of it? 50% of those go away that way. So that saves them about $30,000 because then step 2 is where they have to actually send a certified letter and that costs money. So, you know, it's really interesting. It is a long process. It takes a while. People have plenty of time to get their house in order before they really have to suffer any real consequences if they're willing to. And like I said, 50% of those are taken care of. And they talked about the junk vehicles they got through and how the police are helping to bring areas to light if they're on a call and they see something that needs to be brought to their attention. They do that. Now, this is the thing that I'm saying is, you know, we've got to be careful. If we're running out of money for the everyday things we need, like computers and technology, which is really important in this day and age, then we've got to be careful how we fund things. Sadly, the West Texas Homeless Network was not at the meeting. I'm not sure why, because like the Maxwell Golf people were there to talk about things. And I was like, oh, look, some non-citizens. And I was like, oh, wait, or yeah, some citizens. And I was like, oh, they're just here to talk about their project. So what was I going to say? So then they brought up the idea that this West Texas Homeless Network, they are saying that the biggest complaint for homelessness is downtown businesses. And he said, so their funding was, they have no funding now, I guess, or $200,000 of funding. And so it looked like he was presenting the idea that maybe the city should take over and help fund that. And I'm going to say a hard no, because we don't have the funds. And most homelessness problems in our city are actually reoccurring. They're not going to go away. It's not like there's people who are needing services. Most of it is just people who would like to live out on the streets. And so it sounds like we don't have the money to do it. So I'm hoping they'll make the right decision and not fund this, because there's a lot of funding for these kind of programs outside of the city government. And since we don't have what we need as it is, we should say no to that. I'm not against helping the homeless, but I'm against using money that we don't have. And I'm trying to remember who was talking about this particularly. I think it was Robert Hanna. And he said, there's two steps. If you encounter someone who is overly aggressive as a homeless person, you need to call APD. And then second, if you see any encampments, you need to let them know, because they're always relocating. And sometimes they're so secret, they don't even know where they are. So it's always good to let them know, because they will take care of them. And they took down two encampments, Tit City, and they demoed Elm Creek. And so they've relocated somewhere else again, because this is not just a local, this is not like a problem where people don't know how to get out of this problem. It's a place that most of them really are wanting to live. And I think we should focus on people who are struggling to maintain life in Abilene in a home with things like that. I know that we have a lot of homeless teenagers and things like that. So I'm not saying we shouldn't help, but I'm just saying I think that is a community-based program that should have some input, not the city specifically. All right. So the last thing they talk about was the microtransit, because they have these buses and they thought, well, if we went to smaller buses, it would be cheaper. And they found out that actually it's not cheaper. And so they're doing a microtransit route that, a microtransit route that they were trying to see how effective it was, because, but they're still doing an evaluation on that, because it does cost more, but there is higher revenue potential. So they're working on that. Let's see here. I think that's all. I left a little early for that one, but I will say I'm so glad I went. I learned a lot, and now y'all are probably like maxed out like me, because that was, let's see if I can find my calendar. There it is. That was 6 hours of nonstop talking and lots of information. And unfortunately I had no notes to work with, so I was trying to take it all from scratch. So that went a little longer than I wanted, but I wanted you to hear what their vision is for the budget for fiscal year 2025, so you can start understanding what things are in place as we move forward. And so I'll let you know the next phase of what's going on with that. So I think that wraps up for our week in review. Let's go ahead and go into our week in preview. I don't think there's a whole lot going on this week. It is spring break. So for some people, we don't have spring break this week because we have a different schedule. And so, you know, it's not fun. And there's a lot of life that's being lived this week, even in regular and irregular ways. And so we'll see what we can do this week. So for Tuesday, there is the Board of Adjustments actually was canceled. And I don't know when that will come. And they'll re-meet for that. Maybe they didn't have anything to talk about, which is what I'm thinking, because they only had like one thing last time. So maybe that was it. So good for them. They get a break. Then the Mayor's Advisory Board for People with Disabilities, which used to be the Citizens with Disability Board. They meet on the 12th at 3 p.m. Then the Airport Development Board has also been canceled. So that's fun that it's not on there. But because I was at the retreat on Friday, I saw Don Green and I said, hey, I noticed that it wasn't on the calendar. There were no minutes. And he said, yeah, I'm out of town. So that will be rescheduled for the 20th. And so look, if you're paying attention with me, then you know stuff that the city hasn't even posted yet. So woohoo, right? Maybe by the time you watch this, they've already fixed it. Then that's all for this week. There is actually, and it's not showing on here, but There is an agenda that shows there's a Keep Abilene Beautiful board meeting at 12 p.m. So we'll see. And then, of course, March 14th is the city council meeting. And so we hope to see you there. I will be there, and I would always love the company, depending on what time you have. And it's always good just to make your faces known so you can start to become familiar with the city representatives, because, you know, they are here to serve us, and we are working on how to make that a healthy and happy relationship for both sides. It's not always easy, and it's not always fun, but it is worth it. And I will say I don't regret any of the things I've invested in over the last 9 months. We'll see how I finish strong in these last 3 months, and it'll make it a full year. So it's amazing that I have only 3 months to go to make this into a year. I never thought I would make it this far, but doing this podcast has really helped me to see that there are some people who care and they want to know what's going on. And I think the more we understand that this is available to us, then I think that will help empower us to really make a difference in our community. So it really helps me if you will subscribe and share this with your family and friends, because it brings me great joy to be able to help empower people and educate them and inform them on how they can make an impact in Abilene and the Big Country. Until next time.